Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio here at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today we'll have some important national news. On the eve of the anniversary of the 9/11 terrorist attacks, President Obama will address the nation shortly after we record this show to lay out his strategy for addressing the growing threat posed by ISIS, the Islamic State terrorists in Iraq and Syria. Hear what congressional leaders have to say about the crisis. Our Capitol Report will tell you about Senate action on a constitutional amendment that could overturn the Supreme Court's controversial Citizens United decision on campaign financing. And speaking of special interests seeking to buy elections, you've no doubt heard of the billionaire Koch brothers. Today we'll tell you about the Koch sisters and a national ad campaign they're launching with labor to counter the Koch brothers' messages with voices of ordinary Americans. In Sacramento, charges have been filed against State Senator Ben Wesso for driving under the influence. On our Jobs Talk segment today, we'll tell you why taxi drivers are organizing to get a fair share of the revenues they bring in, and two San Diego officials who are former cab drivers themselves and are now leading efforts to reform city laws to help local cabbies. Parking will soon be free in downtown La Mesa, at least for a little while. We'll tell you why, and then in our newsmaker interview with Susan Barron, you'll hear about her one-woman effort to help struggling local businesses by organizing cash mobs, including a cash mob event coming up soon in La Mesa. The sheriff has issued a warning about an escaped prisoner, and he may be on the loose in East County. Our Crime Beat report also has news about legislative efforts to stop some slick thieves who are stealing cooking oil for a thriving black market in biofuels. And then in the second half of today's show, you'll hear about a lakeside couple under arrest for a robbery involving a makeshift flamethrower. Plus, we'll tell you about graffiti artists who have vandalized boulders at a popular preserve in Alpine, which is not exactly the kind of rock art most hikers want to see. In our Green Scene report, we've got news about a hearing over SDG&E's controversial proposal involving power lines inside Cleveland National Forest. Then on Destination East County, you'll hear about some exciting events coming up this week and next, from wildlife events to an effort to break a world's record with a spectacular fireworks display, as well as an end-of-summer musical festival and an African cultural celebration. Now, if you want to learn more about candidates who are running for local offices countywide, we'll tell you about a League of Women Voters candidate forum that's coming up. We'll have details on executives of a La Mesa real estate company facing criminal charges for the death of an inexperienced tree trimmer they hired who was killed in a tragic and preventable accident. Plus, our staffers will share some of their own stories of what not to do when trimming your trees based on our own mishaps and near misses. Also, learn about a bill to regulate drones and a measure aimed at curbing sexual assaults on college campuses, all on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. President Barack Obama will address the nation Wednesday night to lay out his plan for action against the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS, also known as ISIL, as the president calls it, or the Islamic State, as they call themselves. On Tuesday, the president told congressional leaders that he has the authority to take on the militant Islamic group, but a statement issued by the White House indicated that President Obama believes that, quote, the nation is stronger and our efforts more effective when the president and Congress work together to combat a national security threat like ISIL. The president signaled that he would welcome congressional actions to demonstrate to the world that the United States is truly united in its resolve to defeat the threat posed by the terrorist organization, which is a radical offshoot of Al-Qaeda. Although the atrocities committed by ISIL in Iraq have sparked calls for action, the roots of ISIL are in Syria. The president has thus far said he would not support boots on the ground, meaning U.S. ground forces, only airstrikes. On Tuesday, Republican House Speaker John Boehner said he would back the use of American troops as advisors to Iraqi security forces and for lethal targeting of ISIL leaders. He also called for bolstering policies here at home to protect against the possibility of an attack on American soil. Bipartisan legislation has been introduced that would authorize use of U.S. military force against the Islamic State. California Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein called ISIS a major threat to the U.S. during an interview on CNN's State of the Union program. She praised the president for taking the offense against ISIS and for working to build a coalition of allies in the fight. Republican Congressman Daryl Issa from San Diego has introduced a resolution that would require the president to revoke the 2002 Iraq War Powers Resolution and to create a new short-term authorization for use of force, UT San Diego reports. Under the old War Powers Resolution, the president was limited to 60 days for use of military force, and since he ordered airstrikes against ISIS in August, that limit will be reached on October 7th. ISIS's resolution would give the president a 120-day authorization for use of force to protect American interests and prevent the further expansion of the Islamic State. Meanwhile, a Washington Post ABC News poll shows that support for U.S. military action against ISIS has grown sharply in recent weeks. The latest poll found that 71% of Americans now support airstrikes in Iraq, and 65% would support U.S. airstrikes in Syria. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson with today's Capitol Report. The United States Supreme Court decision in the Citizens United case ruled that corporations, unions, and other special interests can make virtually unlimited contributions to political campaigns. Critics have argued that the court's ruling to toss out campaign finance restrictions is bad for democracy, giving powerful special interests too much influence on elections. But on Monday, the U.S. Senate voted 78-18 in favor of a constitutional amendment that would overturn Citizens United. The vote comes after 16 states formally called for the Citizens United to be repealed. It wasn't easy for the Democratic-controlled Senate to muster up enough Republican votes to meet the two-thirds requirement for a constitutional amendment to pass the U.S. Senate, since the Republican Party and many of its most prominent senators support Citizens United and take large sums for their campaigns from the very corporations that supporters of the amendment seek to restrict. They contend that this is protected free speech under the First Amendment. Many Democrats also take large contributions from labor unions and or corporations, increasing the challenge for reform-minded activists. So how did Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid convince 78 of 100 members in the Senate to vote for the measure? By threatening to cancel trips home and keep the Senate in session over the weekend. Some members, less enthused about the measure, may also have voted to pass it, knowing that it will face stiff opposition in the House, which is controlled by Republicans who are not likely to allow the measure to come up for a vote. That doesn't mean it's dead, however. After the November election, the next Congress could take it up and pass the measure, if they can muster up two-thirds majority. But even then, it will still face a long uphill climb. Since the U.S. became a nation in 1776, only 33 constitutional amendments have ever been passed by the Congress, and of those, only 27 were ratified by the states to become part of the Constitution. The first 10 amendments were ratified collectively as the Bill of Rights in 1789. That means that just 17 have been approved since then, more than two centuries later. A constitutional amendment must either be passed by a two-thirds majority of both houses of Congress or approved at a national constitutional convention called by Congress for this purpose. Next, it must be ratified or approved by three-fourths of all states, currently 38 states. Congress may set a time limit on ratification by the states if it chooses, and has historically limited this to 7 years. So what specifically would the constitutional amendment accomplish if it is ultimately ratified? The amendment declares that Congress and the states may regulate and set reasonable limits on the raising and spending of money by candidates and others to influence elections. The amendment declares that this is necessary to protect political equality and the integrity of our government. The amendment also makes clear that Congress can make distinctions between people and corporations and prohibit the latter from using money to influence elections. That comes after the Supreme Court invoked a doctrine known as a corporate personhood to find that corporations have the same rights as people. The measure also makes clear that the constitutional amendment in no way seeks to abridge freedom of the press. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, the only independent member of the Senate, stated before the vote that the major issue of our time is whether the United States of America retains its democratic foundation or whether we devolve into an oligarchic form of society where a handful of billionaires are able to control our political process by spending hundreds of millions of dollars to elect candidates who represent their interests. It would also prohibit the Supreme Court from reversing any future campaign finance legislation passed by Congress. If the constitutional amendment fails to win approval in Congress plus ratification of 38 states, there is one other way that the Citizens United ruling could potentially be reversed. The ruling was handed down by the Supreme Court with a slim 5-4 majority, a one-vote margin, so a future vacancy on the High Court could potentially give the current or next president an opportunity to appoint a justice who could become a swing vote should a future case challenging Citizens United come before the High Court in the future.
Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy. This is Miriam Raftery with a story about local taxi drivers seeking a fair share of the profits from their labors. Now, a city council member has joined with San Diego's city attorney to propose reforms to help local cab drivers. The city's Public Safety and Livable Neighborhoods Committee will hold a hearing on the proposal September 18th at 1 o'clock in City Hall. In San Diego, 94% of cab drivers are immigrants. Most of them, 71%, are African refugees living in City Heights, a diverse and economically disadvantaged community. But according to a report titled Driven to Despair, prepared by San Diego State University and the Center for Policy Initiatives, the average taxi cab driver locally makes just $5 an hour. These drivers must work 70 hours a week to earn as much as a minimum wage worker would earn in a 40-hour work week. Plus, virtually all cab drivers, 99% of them here, have no health care benefits or workers' compensation insurance should they get injured. A key problem is that in San Diego, only a limited number of permits to operate taxis are issued, which has led to skyrocketing prices for permits on a resale market. This forces drivers to pay high lease rates, so most cannot afford to become owners of the cabs that they drive. They also have to pay for gas, repairs, car washes, and other expenses. Immigrant cab drivers first tried unsuccessfully to negotiate with leaseholders and with the Metropolitan Transit System before finding sympathetic ears at City Hall, and you'll hear why that happened in just a moment. At a July Public Safety Committee meeting, the United Taxi Workers of San Diego mobilized hundreds of taxi drivers to speak about the need for reforms, including lifting the cap on city-issued taxi cab permits, as well as reforms to vehicle age limits and other changes to help drivers and their families attain the American dream. On August 28th, at a press conference, Councilmember Marty Emerald and City Attorney Jan Goldsmith announced their proposed reforms. And here is an excerpt of what Councilmember Emerald had to say, drawing an enthusiastic response from cab drivers and their families gathered for the occasion.
Jan Goldsmith and I were both taxi drivers about 40-some years ago. And so we both still have a soft spot in our hearts for this very important industry. And we want to see it healthy. But it hasn't been healthy here in San Diego for quite a long time. And I'll tell you a big reason why. Because for the last 30 years, it has been city policy in San Diego to limit the number of taxi permits available to hardworking drivers who want to make a good living, who want to serve the public, but now can't afford to, by and large, because of the high cost of permits. Jan will explain a little bit further, but when you limit the supply of a product in the marketplace, the price of that product is going to go up, and that's what's happened here over the course of the last 30 years. Qualified, experienced cab drivers have made substantial investments in their taxis. And they've purchased permits for fees that might range around $3,000. But then these policies that limit the number of permits to drivers has limited the supply and has created an underground market in taxi permits. And because it's a limited supply, there's been this market of trading under the table, and the prices of permits have gone up in excess of more than $100,000. And then these permit holders pass on the cost to who? Their lease drivers. And then through changes in rates and analyzing the overhead costs of the taxis, the rates to consumers go up. This is a no-win situation. And that's why we are gathered here today to announce our proposal going forward to eliminate the caps on taxi permits in the city of San Diego.
Yeah! You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
State Senator Ben Hueso, who was arrested on August 22nd after driving the wrong way on a street in Sacramento, had a blood alcohol level of exactly 0.08, the minimum threshold at which charges can be filed. On Monday, Hueso was formally charged with two misdemeanors, one for driving under the influence and a second for driving with a blood alcohol level of at least 0.08%. He will be arraigned on September 18th, the Sacramento Bee reports. Hueso had reportedly been at a party with Latino caucus members prior to his arrest. He has issued a statement apologizing for his poor personal judgment and said he will accept complete personal responsibility for his actions. The Democratic legislator's district includes southern portions of San Diego and East County, as well as Imperial County. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
Glass says the ads haven't run in California yet, but he suspects they'd have an enthusiastic audience.
The Koch brothers think that if you're not a millionaire by the time you're 30, it's your fault. We have growing economic inequality in this country, and policies pushed by individuals like the Koch brothers are exacerbating that.
Glass says wages in California are lagging behind the overall cost of living in the state. He adds that labor organizations have been working with each other and community organizations to draw a clear picture for dues-paying members and the public of the economic inequality being promoted by Koch brothers-funded candidates and initiatives. Tommy Howe, California News Service.
La Mesa residents will soon be getting free parking for at least 60 days. By a 3-2 vote, La Mesa City Council members voted Tuesday to shut down parking meters, though the shutoff won't take effect until at least mid-October. The decision was made in hopes of boosting business for local merchants in La Mesa's downtown village, where business has been slowed sharply due to construction during a $5 million revitalization project that includes new landscaping, lighting, and other upgrades. Some parking areas have been blocked temporarily as a result. But none of the merchants actually asked for the meters to be shut off, and neither did any shoppers, Parking Commissioner Jim Wiebolt told the council. Three residents did speak on the measure, with two in favor and one opposed, saying such action would be confusing to motorists and cost the city money, La Mesa Today reports. Council members Christine Alicio, Ernie Ewan, and Mark Arapostathis voted in favor of the moratorium on parking meters as a goodwill gesture towards struggling merchants, Arapostathis said. But Mayor Art Madrid and Councilmember Ruth Sterling voted against it. They noted that parking meter fees are what paid for the revitalization project in part. Meter fees also pay the salaries of parking enforcement employees. Shutting off the meters could cost the city almost $500,000. On the other hand, falling sales also means less money from sales revenues for the city. So in the end, the council majority opted for a short-term moratorium, giving shoppers 2 hours of free parking for a two-month period. The moratorium will begin after staff resolves how to inform the public through signs and perhaps covering the parking meters. After the 60-day shutoff, council will assess whether it's been effective at improving business or not, and they may extend the action, but only if the downtown merchants support such a decision, several council members made clear. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. That's the sound of a cash register ringing, but it hasn't been heard much in one local community. Here's why, and here's what some people in the community are doing to help. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. My guest today is Susan Barron, who is a veritable one-woman economic revitalization team for struggling small businesses here in East County. She is the founder of the East San Diego County Cash Mob. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
So tell us what a cash mob is.
Well, a cash mob is a large number of people that have been organized through social media to draw customers to support small businesses during tough economic times.
Now, this is an idea that started nationally. It's been spreading across America. It's really all about supporting those mom-and-pop businesses right here in our own hometowns. So often, these businesses are struggling in a down economy, perhaps. They may be struggling because of more people buying on the internet or from big chain stores Walmart. But people may not realize the economic benefits of having these small businesses and shopping close to home. Tell us about that.
That's correct. I'm a native of El Cajon, and so it was very, very important for me to be involved. I personally had a friend who had a store in downtown El Cajon, and during some really difficult times, she didn't know whether she was going to make it or not. So I felt her pain and met with a friend who came up, shared this idea that he had seen about these cash mobs. I'd heard about flash mobs, wasn't quite sure where he was going because I knew I wasn't going to go dancing anywhere.
You know, flash mobs are where the people run into a store and they pop up and they start protesting or wherever it is. This is not a flash mob. This is a cash mob.
Right. So, and it really hit me in my heart, and I thought, well, this is a way that I can possibly help my friend. So I put together a group of people, and we went and visited her store, and it was quite the emotional outing that day.
Yeah, I was there for that particular one. That was at Glamour Girls Boutique out in El Cajon, and the owner just had tears streaming down her face when this veritable army of people, each committed to spend at least $20, not a lot of money, came in. And how much was raised for her in that one day?
She said that she had raised about $2,000 that day, and she probably hadn't done that over the last couple, 2 months prior.
Yeah.
So it really was a lifesaver for her.
And it doesn't just help the businesses, all that, though certainly that's important. They're members of our community. But also this is bringing sales tax revenues into the local communities. And so, if you're complaining about streets with potholes or traffic lights that don't work or these kinds of things, trees that need trimming.
Right.
These are the sorts of things that our tax dollars go for when you pay sales tax to a local business, right?
That's correct. That's correct. Our city needs a voice. They need to know who we are and what we want, and that we're there behind our people that live there. And supporting the individual small businesses is one of the most important ways to do that.
Now, you have a new cash mob event coming up called Revive the Block Party in La Mesa. What's going on in La Mesa that has triggered the need for this to go on?
Well, actually, I was approached recently by a store owner on La Mesa Boulevard. There's a lot of construction going on. They're doing a revitalization project, and there's limited parking to begin with. They use metered parking and so forth. And so,
and the construction we're talking about, as you mentioned, is a revitalization project. It involves repaving streets, putting in some new trees, replacing aging pipes and things, infrastructure. So it is a long-term project that could go on for several months.
Right. The store owners, though, at this point, from the construction that's going on, are saying that their businesses have dropped about 80% due to this.
80% is huge.
It is huge.
And, you know, if we don't support local businesses in tough times like this, we could see what happened in Alpine, when they had the Sunrise Power Link that tore up the streets for more than a year, and many of their long-term small businesses went under. They simply were not able to survive that much disruption. Now, granted, we don't have flagmen delaying traffic for 20 minutes from one end of town to another in La Mesa like you did in Alpine. We're talking about two blocks that are torn up, and even there's still some parking. It's not that bad, but apparently it's kept a lot of people away.
Right. It has been just enough to discourage the businesses there. And so they were reaching out and asking for help.
When is the cash mob coming to La Mesa?
The cash mob's coming to La Mesa on this Saturday, the 13th. In the past, we've come as a large group all at once and just invaded the businesses. But the fact that there's so many that are asking for our assistance, that we just decided to make it an all-day thing. So that way, everybody and anyone that had any desire to come down and help support La Mesa could be involved.
What are the four businesses that you're targeting this time around?
I'm targeting Act Two, A Fist of Wildflowers, Amethyst Moon, and the O'Dunn Fine Art.
And it's interesting to me because this includes some brand new businesses in La Mesa, as well as some long time ones. Act Two has been around for over 25 years. It's the go-to place where a lot of the girls go to for secondhand prom dresses that look spectacular, and they have everyday clothes as well. And if she's struggling, she's a very smart, savvy businesswoman. I think that really says something about how badly.
Yeah, she's been there for quite a while.
It really says something about how badly the construction is hitting La Mesa.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Amethyst Moon is a new store for La Mesa. Actually, Terry has Home and Soul, which was in El Cajon. Mm-hmm. And she hasn't been there. She hasn't moved over to La Mesa too terribly. It hasn't been that long a period of time, just a few months, I would say. Mm-hmm. And she was doing fabulous. And then all of a sudden, the bottom fell out.
Yeah.
Terry's not new to the East County Cash Mob because we had surprised her business mm-hmm. back when she was in El Cajon as well.
So she knows what good you
can
do.
She knows.
And I see she's also invited Glamour Girls, your very first Cash Mob recipient, to come and be a special guest and have some of their beautiful clothing as well inside the store.
She has. Peggy Harris, the owner of Glamour Girls, was such a big fan of what happened that now she attends every one of the Cash Mobs that we have as well. And so Terry had asked her to kind of set up a little vendor in her classroom there so she could be a part of that as well.
So it's really a movement that's growing.
Yes.
A Handful of Wildflowers now is one of the newer businesses in La Mesa. It's been there a few years, but they started in tough economic times. And I know she's just been trying to hang in there until the economy really turns around and gets vibrant again.
That's
so
correct.
Again, another business where this is bad timing for. And then there's O'Dunn Fine Art.
That's right.
Where the owner, Shannon O'Dunn, lost her husband just months ago. She'd been dealing with that tragedy. And then she had a vehicle where the driver hit the gas instead of the brake by accident and plowed right through the glass window on her storefront.
That's correct.
So she was closed for weeks dealing with the mess and the insurance of that and now this. So, yeah, these are businesses that really have had some hard times.
That's correct.
So if people want to help and they want to get involved, Susan, where can they go and get more information about the East San Diego County Cash Mob?
Well, I do have a Facebook page. It's East SD CO Cash Mob.
Which stands for East San Diego County. So East SD Co Cash Mob.
Correct. And you can ask to be in the group there. Just friend us and be a part of it. And then that way, whenever we post an event or so forth, you'll get the Facebook attention as well.
Very good. And if someone out there knows a small business where the owner is struggling for some reason, do you take nominations if someone wants to help a friend?
We're always open for suggestions. So if you have a cause, join our group on Facebook and we'll take a look at it.
Well, very good. And if you tuned in late, listeners, we've been speaking with Susan Barron. She's the founder of the East San Diego County Cash Mob, and they are coming to La Mesa with a Revive the Block party. The date again on that is this Saturday, September 13th, all day.
Correct.
It's a way where the community is invited to come out and support the local merchants during the revitalization project construction that's impacted so many of them out there.
That's right. My understanding is these businesses are going to have specials and prizes and all sorts of things for their appreciation for their customers as well.
Well, very good. So it sounds like a fun day. And I want to thank you very much, Susan, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you, Miriam.
The state of California is cracking down on slick thieves who have been snatching used cooking oil from restaurants to sell on the black market for use as biofuels. It's selling for over $1.50 a gallon, though it may smell like french fries or fried chicken. Cumulatively, these losses are costing restaurants millions of dollars a year. UT San Diego reports that some enterprising criminals have used silent vacuum pumps, blow torches, and hydraulic rescue talons to pry open or force holes into reinforced steel containers, then suction out the used oil. Some vats can hold tens of thousands of gallons. These crimes are occurring across California, including here in San Diego. The biofuels made from recycled cooking oils are used to power vehicles in what has become a major industry thanks to tax credits and government mandates for renewable energy. But a bill that's passed the legislature and is now on Governor Jerry Brown's desk would impose harsher penalties. Backers of the legislation, Assembly Bill 1566, hope harsher penalties, along with new provisions for roadside inspections and record keeping, will translate into more action by law enforcement and prosecutors. Individual oil thefts often qualify as petty theft, but cumulatively cost biofuel companies and restaurants millions of dollars every year. Under the bill, fines of up to $1,000 can be imposed against first offenders who steal cooking oil. By the third offense, a fine of $10,000 could be imposed. Vehicles hauling purloined oil may also be seized. There will also be improved requirements for roadside inspections of trucks hauling oils and better record keeping to make it easier for law enforcement to nab those slippery thieves. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
The sheriff has issued a warning to residents to be on the lookout for Don Andrea Torrio, a prisoner who escaped custody from Central Jail just before 6 p.m. on Tuesday. He was last seen wearing a dark sleeveless shirt with a star in the middle, khaki shorts, and slippers. He has a tattoo on his left bicep shoulder area. He has short brown hair and brown eyes. Torrio is known to frequent the El Cajon, Santee, and Rancho San Diego areas. He was arrested September 5th in Santee on charges of possession of drugs with intent to sell and also drug paraphernalia, as well as being under the influence of drugs. The warrant was served on Torrio at a home in the 700 block of Singing Trails Drive. He has no history of violence. If you see this escaped prisoner, you are urged to call 911. If you have information on Torrio's whereabouts, you can call Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. You can remain anonymous and be eligible for up to a $1,000 reward for information that leads to an arrest. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This is Janice Russell with a Crime Beat report. A Lakeside couple is under arrest following a robbery in which the husband allegedly threatened employees at a Home Depot store in Poway with a makeshift flamethrower. Ignacio Brambilla reportedly stole tools by hiding them in a baby stroller. When workers confronted him outside the store, he grabbed an aerosol can, sprayed its flammable contents at the workers, and then ignited the liquid with a cigarette lighter, said Sergeant Chad Boudreau with the San Diego Sheriff's Department. No one was injured in the attack. The suspect drove off in a car along with his wife Sarah and their 18-month-old toddler. Deputies pulled them over a short distance away and found the stolen merchandise in their truck. The couple was arrested on suspicion of robbery, conspiracy, child cruelty, and assault with the intent to commit a felony. The husband was also booked for allegedly being under the influence of a controlled substance. Their toddler son, along with their twin 12-year-old boys, have been taken into protective custody.
This is Miriam Raftery with a story about rock art that is not the kind hikers in the backcountry want to see. Vandals have defaced numerous large boulders at Wright's Field Preserve in Alpine with graffiti tags, including obscene images and swastikas, the Backcountry Land Trust reports. This is not the first time that the graffiti taggers have struck the region. During the summer, other boulders on private property next to the preserve were also tarnished with graffiti. The Sheriff's Department and county code enforcement officials are investigating and will take corrective action to address this recent graffiti vandalism. Community members and hikers are asked to please report any suspicious activity at Wright's Field directly to the Sheriff's Department by calling 858-565-5200, or you can contact the Backcountry Land Trust directly by calling 619-504-8181 or reach them through their website at www.bclt.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. San Diego Gas and Electric Company has requested a master special use permit and aims to replace and fire-harden power lines in and around Cleveland National Forest. The plans have caused controversy, with some environmentalists raising concerns over the size and scope of SDG&E's plans. Now, the California Public Utilities Commission and Cleveland National Forest will hold a public meeting on October 1st from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Alpine Community Center regarding a joint draft environmental impact report and environmental impact statement prepared by the two agencies. The environmental documents and details of the Cleveland National Forest project are available at eastcountymagazine.org in our Green Living section or on the California Public Utilities website.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson
and Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Rebecca Williamson, and I'm here with Miriam Raftery, who's filling in for Leon on Destination East County this week. This week's Destination East County has some wild events, from the We Like It Wild benefit for Project Wildlife to a wildlife tracking event, a storytelling session, and an effort to break a world record with a spectacular fireworks display. Plus, we'll have previews of future attractions, from a free kids care fest to a music festival in Julian, from theater and concert performances to a Somali Bantu African cultural celebration. We'll have all this and more, so stay tuned for another edition of East County Magazine's Destination East County.
Viejas will attempt to launch the world's largest chain of fireworks, more than 10,000 of them, to celebrate its 23rd anniversary on Friday, September 12th at 8 p.m. You're invited to the festivities near the Viejas Hotel pool in Alpine to witness the sky come alive with fireworks during this Guinness Book of World Records-setting attempt. You can learn more at viejas.com.
On Saturday, September 13th, starting at 9 a.m., experts in wildlife tracking with the San Diego Tracking Team will guide a one-mile, two-hour tour identifying wildlife tracks in Lakeside's River Park Conservancy. To register, visit lakesideriverpark.org.
Project Wildlife invites you to the We Like It Wild benefit event on September 14th from 5 to 8 p.m. This gala will be held at the Pillsbury Ranch in Lakeside, the home of famed wildlife and conservation expert Joan Embry, the San Diego Zoo's ambassador. Joan will serve as host and provide up-close and personal encounters with her exotic animals. We Like It Wild raises critical funds for Project Wildlife's work to rehabilitate local wildlife in need and educate the public on conservation. Guests will also enjoy bidding on unique and adventurous auction items, plus learn about wildlife both locally and around the world. For more information or tickets, you can visit welikeitwild.org.
Mission Trails Regional Park invites you to take a seat in their amphitheater on September 13th from 6 to 8 p.m. for the third annual Harvest of Stories. Storytellers of San Diego will delight and entertain the audience with nature tales at this family event, which this year also features a sing-along and some dancing. There will be a nominal cost for this event. Opportunity drawings will also be held and refreshments will be served. For details, you can visit mtrp.org.
The Backcountry Land Trust will hold its third annual Wine and Cheese Friendraiser on Saturday, September 13th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Wright's Field in Alpine. The Podunk Poets will provide live music. The event also features a hosted bar, hors d'oeuvres, silent auction, and raffle. Tickets for the Backcountry Land Trust event are available online in advance at bclt.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. The Moxie Theater is launching its 10th anniversary season with opening night September 20th featuring Liz Duffy Adams, A Discourse on the Wonders of the Invisible World. Adams' Dog Act was the very first Moxie Theater show back in 2005, 5 years before the company had even moved into its current Rolando Performance Space just west of La Mesa. For details and tickets, visit moxietheater.org.
You're invited to the 2014 Kids Care Fest, a free, family-oriented event featuring free healthcare screenings. This year, Kids Care Fest will be held on Saturday, September 20th at Briarcrest Park on Wakarusa Street in La Mesa. The event runs from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Kids Care Fest is presented by the Grossmont Healthcare District, La Mesa Park and Recreation Foundation, and the City of La Mesa. Organizers expect more than 1,000 children will receive free, potentially life-saving healthcare screenings, including hearing, vision, and dental screenings. Free medical information will be available from doctors and pharmacists, plus free kids fingerprinting from the police. You can also enjoy more free activities, including water safety, inflatable jumps, and pony rides, demonstrations, and displays from law enforcement and fire departments. For more information, visit kidscarefest.org.
A cultural celebration featuring music, dance, and cuisine of San Diego's Somali Bantu community will be held on Saturday, September 20th from 2 to 5 p.m. at the United Domestic Workers of America office, 4855 Seminole Drive, San Diego. All proceeds benefit the Somali Bantu Association of America's programs impacting refugees in our community. For information or tickets, contact 619-206-4000 or visit sbaoa.org.
And for the 45th year, Julian celebrates the end of summer with music. The Julian Music Festival will be held at the Mangini Winery on September 20th from 1 to 8 p.m. This year's event features bluegrass to celebrate the festival's roots, western ballads to remember the past, as well as music by current songwriters and singers. Performers range from cool band Luke performing high-energy favorites to Trails and Rails offering train songs, cowboy tunes, pop, swing, vocal harmonies, and whistling. For tickets and more information, you can visit julianmusicfestival.com.
Hot cars and spicy chili are all a part of the Alpine Kiwanis 2014 annual car show and chili cook-off event, which also features a pancake breakfast. If you've revved up for the festivities on Saturday, September 20th from 7 to 8 p.m., you can visit the Alpine Community Center located at 1830 Alpine Boulevard in Alpine.
Music from the Middle East, a classical string quartet, contemporary tunes from Argentina, and a pop, rock, and soul ensemble are among the performances set for Cuyamaca College's Fall Concert Series beginning September 18th. The fall season gets underway with Kembang Sunda, an Indonesian ensemble performing traditional music from West Java on bronze percussion instruments. A full list of performances and low-cost ticket details can be found at cuyamaca.edu/performingarts.
September 28th is Viejas Days in Alpine, complete with a parade. The parade rolls out at 2 p.m. down Alpine Boulevard to the Alpine Creek Town Center, complete with floats, bands, and plenty of family fun.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org. And if you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County Show on KNSJ, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
The League of Women Voters invites the public to a Meet the Candidates reception and forum featuring candidates running for numerous offices in San Diego and East County in the November 4th election. The event will be held on Wednesday, October 1st from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Hall of Champions in Balboa Park. Candidates for the following offices have been invited to participate. State Senate Districts 36, 38, and 40. District 36 is an open seat. Seats 38 and 40 are held by incumbent Senators Joel Anderson and Ben Hueso. State Assembly Districts 71, 77, 78, and 79. currently held by incumbents Brian Jones, Brian Mensheim, Tony Atkins, and Shirley Weber. San Diego City Council District 6, which is an open seat with no incumbent, San Diego Community College Districts A and E, Superior Court Judge Office 25, an open seat, and San Diego Unified School Board District B, currently held by incumbent Kevin Beiser. The forum will be moderated by Carl Luna, PhD Professor of Political Science, San Diego Mesa College. Light refreshments will be served. Candidates will each make 2-minute introductory statements. There will also be time for networking and asking questions of candidates in an informal atmosphere. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on a tragedy that occurred last November 12th in La Mesa. Executives of a company that hired a man with no tree trimming experience to trim a towering eucalyptus tree may soon stand trial for the man's death. A large branch came loose and struck Joshua Pudsey in the head outside a La Mesa home, killing him. Three Frogs Incorporated, a real estate company in La Mesa, and three of its executives now face criminal charges of violating Federal Occupational Health and Safety Administration, or OSHA, standards, as well as unemployment insurance fraud and failing to have workers' compensation insurance. Those charged are the company's president, David Scott Wolf, financial officer Jonathan Cox, and chief operating officer John Murphy. A preliminary hearing is underway this week to determine if they will face trial. Fines of $90,000 or more have also been levied against the company. It is illegal in California for a firm to have a tree over 15 feet tall trimmed without having a qualified tree expert on the job. Pudsey also had no safety harness on, the UT San Diego has reported. 10 News reports that the victim's mother, Debbie Anderson, told the court that her son was a tile layer and a painter who had never trimmed the tree before except on the day before his fatal accident. Then he expressed fears after his first trimming assignment, and he promised his mother he would not get up into a tree again, she testified. She believes he was pressured into again working on this towering tree, which stood 30 to 60 feet tall. Joshua Pudsey was not a licensed contractor. The plastic hat he wore proved inadequate to protect him. If they're convicted, the company's executives could be sentenced to up to 6.5 years in prison. But for the family, their pain will last a lifetime. Pudsey's fiancée was pregnant when the tragedy occurred, and she has since given birth to a son, now 3 months old, who will never meet his father. His family has set up a Facebook page for friends of Joshua Pudsey to post memories so that his son, Jackson Joshua Pudsey, can know what his daddy meant to everyone he touched.
You know the story about the man who was killed by a tree branch? A very sad story.
Yeah,
had
terrible.
A young wife. But, you know, I had an experience when I was younger where I tied off a branch.
Tell us what happened, Leon.
It was a big branch, and I had never done this kind of work before, but I was told to be careful that these branches are heavy and they can hurt somebody. So I tied a rope to the branch I was cutting off and threw the rope over the branch above it and tied it to the bumper of my truck.
Oh, no.
And it cut off the branch, which immediately went straight to the ground and lifted the bumper right off my truck.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
And there was my truck bumper up there in that tree.
The bumper was up in the tree.
The bumper's in the tree.
It wasn't.
The branch was on the ground.
So this is a good example or bad example of what not to do when trimming trees. But I got to fess up. I have one of my own like that, Leon.
What happened?
We had a tree come over in a storm, but it didn't fall all the way over. It got hung up on an arbor, and the canopy of the tree, the top branches, was about 1 inch from coming through a plate glass window that was 12 feet wide. And I had my cat sitting there inside, my kid, my toddler inside. And I thought, wow, I got to do something. I can't let that tree come through. What I should have done is called a tree company to come out and deal with it. But I didn't. I went out there and grabbed the clippers and thought, you know, I can clip enough of these top branches off so that if this comes down the rest of the way, it's not going to break that big window.
Well, the minute I got underneath and started trimming, the wind kicked up and the tree did come down the rest of the way. And a big branch caught me right in the head, conked me right in the head. And
oh, no. Were you hurt?
Yeah. I wound up hurting a disc in my neck. And
ouch. You know,
so I definitely learned my lesson about
Well, we both learned our lessons. From now on, it's a professional tree trimmer for me.
Absolutely. It's actually the law in California for really big trees over 15 feet. You're not supposed to cut them unless you have a tree professional there. And I've learned that there's good reason for that.
You know, in Hawaii, there was, they have these pine trees where they climb them. And this one guy used to climb to the top of these trees and he would top them off and then he would lasso the next tree over and actually pull the top of the tree towards him.
Wow.
And he would go from one tree to the next to the tops of these trees. And that was his job. He was a tree topper.
Wow.
Imagine that. And he dyed his blonde hair green.
Why
did he do that? I don't know. Because he was a tree topper for a living, so he decided to dye his hair green and it fit.
Well, I have a property with a lot of trees, and I've learned a lot about this through the years. One thing we've learned is you don't want to trim them, folks, during the nesting season in the spring. My neighbor did that. We had this wonderful rare bird that was nesting that was never seen in San Diego County. It's a very rare bird. The ornithologists were all excited to hear it was here. And one day I heard the buzzsaws going, and I came out, and she had a tree trimming company out there, and she cut it down. It was right on the property line.
Oh, it was leaning.
And I said, no.
So what happened to the bird?
We never saw him again. I'm sure they probably, they went to the happy hunting grounds in the sky, I guess.
Oh, well, at least it was like a green Mexican parrot up there.
It was a black,
reciting the dangerous Dan McGrew or something.
Black Phanopeplus, a beautiful black
a hoot of what?
With a crest. It looks like a cardinal, only black with a crest on it.
Oh, yeah. Black cardinal.
Yeah. Then we also have these two big 50-foot-tall ficus trees that are very old. And they're very difficult to trim, and they're on a slope. And so you have to hire somebody who actually climbs the tree, and then they get the big
cherry picker, the big bucket?
The big cherry picker with the bucket. Yeah. But even with that, there's parts of it you can't reach. So someone has to actually climb it and tie themselves on with a harness. And, we really learned that although we get multiple estimates, it's important as a homeowner, a property owner, to ask questions. Because sometimes that low bid is from somebody who doesn't have insurance. You want to ask to see their license and you want to ask to see the proof of their workman's liability insurance before you hire anybody to do that. Because if heaven forbid somebody falls, first of all, you don't want an inexperienced person to fall and get hurt in the first place. And if they do get hurt, you want to be sure that there's proper insurance so that the contractor is liable and so that their medical bills will be taken care of.
So look for a little wiry guy with green hair.
There you go. And if you're thinking about trimming a big tree and you haven't got experience doing that, you might want to think again.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
The American Civil Liberties Union in San Diego is asking the public to urge Governor Jerry Brown to sign Assembly Bill 1327, which passed the legislature with bipartisan support. The measure would require police to get a warrant before using drones to conduct surveillance on you, your family, or others in your community. According to Norma Chavez Pedersen, the executive director of the ACLU in San Diego, AB 1327 is a huge victory for personal privacy that could set a precedent for the rest of the nation. She says law enforcement interests oppose AB 1327. However, 76% of Americans surveyed believe police should get a warrant before using drones against citizens. She adds, in California, we understand innovation. We also understand privacy and civil rights. California should lead, not lag, in protecting people's privacy from intrusion by drones. The ACLU is urging you to contact the governor. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
One in five students nationwide is a victim of sexual assault. Increasingly, campuses across America are facing criticism for not doing enough to protect students from sexual assault. The Federal Department of Education has released a list of schools that may have violated federal laws in their handling of sexual assault cases and harassment. The University of California at Berkeley and the University of Southern California are among the schools under federal investigation. Seeking to reverse this trend, the California legislature has just passed a bill that requires publicly funded universities and colleges in California to adopt a yes means yes policy. So what does that mean? It means that if a student doesn't say yes, it's not consent, and sexual activity can be prosecuted as rape. It's not consent if a student is silent or doesn't resist. It's not consent if one party is drunk, on drugs, or passed out. State-funded colleges and universities that fail to adopt strict policies on sexual assault will not be able to receive financial aid money if this measure is approved by Governor Brown. The bill passed the legislature unanimously, with no opposition from any college or university. Governor Jerry Brown has until September 30th to sign the bill. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The American Civil Liberties Union in San Diego is asking the public to urge Governor Jerry Brown to sign Assembly Bill 1327, which passed the legislature with bipartisan support. The measure would require police to get a warrant before using drones to conduct surveillance on you, your family, or others in your community. According to Norma Chavez-Peterson, the executive director of the ACLU in San Diego, AB 1327 is a huge victory for personal privacy that could set a precedent for the rest of the nation. She says law enforcement interests oppose AB 1327. However, 76% of Americans surveyed believe police should get a warrant before using drones against citizens. She adds, in California, we understand innovation. We also understand privacy and civil rights. California should lead, not lag, in protecting people's privacy from intrusion by drones. The ACLU is urging you to contact the governor. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.